taking a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva. Yay. Who? Cha. And. Yay. Who? Cha. And. Tan. Such principles. Samanuvrata. Following. Pashandina. Atheists. Te. They. Bhavantu. Let them become. Satshastra. Paripantina. Diverted from transcendental scriptural injunctions. Translation. One who takes a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva, or who follows such principles, will certainly become an atheist and be diverted from transcendental scriptural injunctions. Purport. It is sometimes seen that devotees of Lord Shiva imitate the characteristics of Lord Shiva. For example, Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison. So do some of the followers of Lord Shiva imitate him and try taking intoxicants like ganja, marijuana. Here the curse is that if someone follows such principles, he must become an infidel and turn against the principles of Vedic regulation. It is said that such devotees of Lord Shiva will be shastra paripantina, which means opposed to the conclusion of shastra or scripture. This is confirmed in the Padma Puran also. Lord Shiva was ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to preach the impersonal or Mayavad philosophy for a particular purpose, just as Lord Buddha preached the philosophy of voidness for particular purposes mentioned in the Shastra. Sometimes it is necessary to preach a philosophical doctrine, which is against the Vedic conclusion. In the Shiva Purana, it is stated that Lord Shiva said to Parvati that in the Kali Yuga, in the body of a Brahmana, he would preach the Mayavad philosophy. Thus, it is generally found that the worshippers of Lord Shiva are Mayavadi followers. Lord Shiva himself says, Mayavadam asachchastram. Asachchastra, as explained here, means the doctrine of Mayavada impersonalism, or becoming one with the Supreme. Bhrigu Muni cursed that persons who worship Lord Shiva would become followers of this Mayavada asachchastra, which attempts to establish that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impersonal. Besides that, among the worshippers of Lord Shiva, there's a section who live a devilish life. Srimad Bhagavatam and Narada Pancharatra are authorized scriptures that are considered Sat Shastra, or scriptures which lead one to the path of God realization. Asat Shastras are just the opposite. So Shiva here is then, for many, then representing here the mode of ignorance. They're not necessarily aware of this, but being the Lord of ignorance because of destruction, then those who take shelter of him as the ultimate then are going to have this problem that their understanding of themselves and everything about in the universe is going to be incorrect. So it's actually going to be, as said here, against the Shastras. Shastra means its conclusion. Not just using the verses or using the ritual, but actually what is the conclusion? That's the most important thing. Because you have an understanding, you perform an activity, but what's important is the result that's gotten. Right? Because that result then defines how the performance of the activity and one's identity. So if the result is against the purpose of the scriptures, which is to worship the Supreme Lord, then that means one's identity in the process followed was not proper. So here is by taking Shiva as the Supreme, then they're going to come up with these problems. This Mayavad philosophy, this is given by Lord Shiva himself. So they're actually worshippers of Shiva. We don't mean here devotees who understand that Lord Shiva is the greatest of devotees, and so worshipping him as a devotee. Here we're talking about those who worship him as the Supreme. They're going to have problems. So, because we can see is that as a position that both sides actually are understanding more or less what is the proper conclusion of the Shastra. Right? Bhrigu is saying here that one will miss that point by worshipping Shiva. And, you know, in other words, one will be philosophically deviated. And the Nandishwar is cursing these Brahmins that their knowledge and all that, even though they're so educated and everything, will not actually come to fruition because they will be on the bodily concept of life. So both of them know that these are bad positions. In other words, to be distracted by karma or jnana is not proper. And so both of these parties are cursing based on this, that through their knowledge or through their activities, they're going to be distracted from the real conclusion, which is the proper worship of the Lord. So we see as in the beginning of creation, this was understood. But unfortunately, cursing is happening. Now this cursing then is something that, as Prabhupada points out in the purports before, is something that is the pastime of the neophyte devotees. But it's not actually the great devotees use this, unless there's some benefit to it, like that. We see Narad Muni may curse someone in ignorance because it will benefit him, like Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. Then they met Krishna. Or Ravana, then he meets Krishna. So this kind of curse is nice. It's according to Shastra, is just. In other words, the material consideration is correct. The understanding of what's wrong about the material situation is correct. And so therefore you can give a curse that is in line with correcting that and bringing one to Krishna consciousness. That's a useful curse. Otherwise, one's already cursed being in the material world. So it's not actually of much benefit to do further curses. Yes, by anger and greed, lust, then one becomes overwhelmed. One feels in this way, but one sees that it's not actually... Brahma and others aren't cursing. Shiva's not cursing. So all the great personalities aren't. They see it as an unfortunate situation in which Daksha, being proud of his knowledge, doesn't consider the assembly good enough for him, as if he's the most senior. Brahma is there, Naraji is there, other great saints and sages are there, but somehow or another Daksha considers the assembly less then important for him because of his interaction, you know, with Lord Shiva, based on him being his son-in-law, right? So, therefore, the curses were based on the bodily conception. He has so much knowledge, but he doesn't know actually who Shiva is. And so, you know, they will continue with this. But we see that this kind of cursing is natural on the mundane platform. Better than that is tolerance, right? But better than that is the well-wishing of the other party. So that's how we can see the difference if we say, but Narad Muni cursed, but his was for the actual benefit. The mundane, it's like if someone's having a bad dream and in their bad dream they do nonsense, would you consider persecuting them? Would you consider that there's a need for retribution? Right? Is there a need for them to be justice to be applied? Yes or no? No. So what is the difference between the material dream where the living entity is not seeing the Supreme Lord and is engaged in activities and illusion and thinking that in that world justice is so important? It's just as much of a dream. Just in our ignorance, we make distinction between kinds of ignorance. This ignorance is better than that ignorance, right? You know, so someone is okay. You know, he's taking this intoxication. That's not as bad as that intoxication, or this material activity is not as bad as that one. You know, but it's like the Shastras give. It's like between wet stool and dry stool. Right? You know, the cow dung patty on the ground is wet. And we're thinking, oh, this is not nice. But the cow dung patty that's been put on the wall and is dry, now this is nice. but it's still stool. In actuality, we make a distinction in the material world. Yes, we do make that distinction. But for Krishna consciousness, what is favorable for Krishna? What's not favorable? What's going to bring you closer to Krishna? What's going to take you away? So distinction is made. Intelligence is there. But it's based on Shastra. Right? Otherwise, then we're going to end up here, this Asat Shastra. That it's not going to be based on Shastra. Why is something not good or something good? If it's not based on Shastra, it's all not good. It's just wet stool or dry stool. So what makes this illusion even have any value? It's connection to Krishna. Right? It's just an illusion. It's a dream. One is dreaming that I am this body, this is my mother and father, this is my family. I am wealthy, I am powerful, or I am poor and I am wretched. You know, I'm good looking, I'm not. Whatever it is, it's a dream. Because the soul is eternal, and then for some moments, they have this identity. And within a very short time, there's a new one, and a new one, and a new one. The Python Sadhu, when asked, how he's doing, who is he, and that, then his point was, is when, in which life, which one are you talking about? This one, I'm looking quite healthy. And other ones, I'm not, My parents, you say, these are my parents, but last life, some other people were parents, and before that, another. So I've been through millions and billions of parents. So, which one? So this element of this illusion, its only importance is its connection to Krishna. That's all. There's no other consideration. Other considerations are illusion itself. Right? Two drunk people are sitting around talking all kinds of nonsense and this and like that. They take it very seriously. They think it's real. But the next morning, they'll wake up and go, wow, that was a lot of nonsense. So that's the material world. So the connection to Krishna, that's what makes it of value. If it's not connected to Krishna, it doesn't actually have any meaning. Right? A person's sick, a person's delirious. They do all kinds of things that one would not normally do, say all kinds of things that no one would normally say. Does anyone take them to court? Does anyone put them in jail? Right? Are they held responsible? No, because you say they're sick. So someone in the material consciousness, they're sick. So, you act in such a way the sickness is not going to bother them further. But it's never taken seriously. So, the mundane is never taken seriously. What's taken seriously is how to connect to Krishna. And since one identifies with that position, then that's where you start. The person has a fever. Then you deal with the fever. You give fever medicine. They have a cold. You start with a cold. You give them that. They have a bad stomach. You start with that. That's the only importance. Right? Is the disease important? Is it really important that they have this fever? Right? Do we identify now they are this fever person? Right? And so therefore they have the name fever man. Right? Someone else has the, cold man or the bad stomach man. But the point is that's where you start. So if the person is overwhelmed by a certain aspect of karma, you start there and connect that to Krishna and gradually take it to Krishna. They're overwhelmed by jnana, you start there, take that to Krishna. Right? Yoga, whatever it is, morality, sense gratification, liberation, anything, you start there. And connect that to Krishna. That's the process. That is broad-minded. That is someone who is actually a preacher who can preach to anybody, at any place, any time. Because they're actually dealing with the real situation. Not trying to create a new illusion. And then judge everything by that. So we see here, that's the unfortunate thing that's going on, is the material world's already bad enough. People are already here because they've forgotten the Lord. They don't understand the conclusions of the Shastra. They become ritualistic if they do follow them. Right? So, and then now they've been made like official curses, official problems. They're already a problem. You know? So that's what's unfortunate. That's why the great personalities didn't get involved. But whatever it is, since this is the material world, this is why people have come here to actually enjoy these kind of cursed situations. Therefore, then, you have to make it official. You know, just like Krishna's never born. But when he comes here, you have to create an official how he's born, how he leaves, you know, who's connected to who, everything like that. So in the same way, as because people will study the scriptures, come to the wrong conclusions, miss the conclusions, or study the shastras and then simply become ritualistic, then to make it official, then here we have it. So Nandeshwar and Bhrigu Muni and all them, then they made it official. So here then, specifically then, we're dealing with, we see that the followers of the Shaivites generally are always Mayavadis. It's like, you don't, only those who are Vaishnavas may worship Shiva, but those who are followers of Shiva, they're all Mayavadis. Like that. Very rare to find anything other than that. You know, other than someone who's actually devoted to Shiva as a person, you know, whatever his position. Like that. So Nandeshwar is one of them. But it's rare. So here then this Mayavad philosophy, the difficulty with it is it's starting with it that the world is illusion, but not from that my perception of is illusion, which is something you can work with solidly, but that the material world, that it exists as an illusion, that I exist as an illusion, that there's anything to be done or accomplished is an illusion. So of course, right there, they destroy their own philosophy, but hey, they're Mayavadis. Who said they were smart enough to understand this? Right? So they don't even understand it. By their own philosophy, they don't have a philosophy. By their own philosophy, they can't have this philosophy. To speak it, to think it, to practice it, is all illusion. Therefore, one can never actually come to a transcendental position. Because if everything's illusion, then that means there is no such position of absolute transcendence. Because that means then the material creation, which is part of God's creation, is illusion. That means you don't actually accept the supremacy of the Lord, of Brahman. The Brahman being beyond all this can also be the cause, the cause of all this. So one's not actually accepting even Brahman. That's why they're called atheists. Because Brahman realization is, it's a form of Krishna. It's a lower form. It's not as wonderful and as sweet. But it's still Krishna. That the potencies that make the sun rise and the moon do what it does and all these things, the seasons, that's Krishna's potency. It's Krishna. Right? So they're not actually even on that platform. They don't even accept the supremacy of Brahman, even though they say they're Brahmavadis. They're not actually. They're Buddhists. But, you know, they, you know, leave their eyebrows and, you know, wear two pieces of cloth instead of one. And they seemingly follow the Vedas. But the conclusion is just as Buddhistic as those who follow Buddha. No difference. So then this is a very disturbing, that one can study the Shastra and actually come to this, to a situation where one actually doesn't understand. So one is taking it that, you know, especially we see here is that the things described by the Shastra are illusion, don't exist. But at the same time as what we create in our own mind, our own values, our own feelings, we'll say that has substance. So we can see that this is even a further perversion of the Mayavad philosophy, even more dangerous. Because the Mayavad philosophy, at least you have to give a Shastra quote. Right? But in this further modern perversion, then it's better you don't. Right? So it's so far from the Shastra that one is not even allowed to have faith in the Shastra. The Mayavada has gone to that degree. So one has to be very, very careful of these things. That, any questions? Comments? Yes. Okay. Question is, if Mayavada philosophy doesn't make any sense, how does it become popular? Does it make sense being in the material world? Right? You could be in a situation where you live eternally. Right? In a steady relationship. Krishna doesn't go away. Right? Okay, we may complain, hey, he went to Mathura. What do you mean he doesn't go away? But that relationship doesn't go away. It doesn't change. Right? Everybody's there. They're working for the benefit of others. Right? In Braj, especially what's being offered, they're only worried about the other person's pleasure. It's not even like Dwarka where it's 50-50. In like material world, 50-50 is like top of the shelf. You know, but there in Goloka, it's in the middle. Braj, 100% you're working for others. It's eternal. You have a spiritual body. No birth, death, old age, and disease. Right? Everything's conscious. Right? Everything's perfectly clean and pure and wonderful. So even just the situation is so much greater than here. Then you have actual relationship, rasa, where you have eternal relationship interaction, the experience gained makes that position of being in the perfect spiritual environment just to seem like a fraction of a portion of a drop of happiness compared to this unlimited ocean. Right? So in other words, being situated in the spiritual world and the niceness of being in the spiritual world, that everything is conscious and pure and wonderful and eternal, that happiness is one fraction of a portion of a drop of the happiness of the actual happiness gained in the relationship with Krishna, in loving rasa, right, in prema, right? So let alone the material world, everything's temporary. Everything that's important to you will be taken away on the material platform. It will go. Guaranteed. If not this, you're really pious, it'll last you three lifetimes. You know? Because if you think about it, the common thing is grandfather, father, then son are doing very well, but generally in the son's lifetime, it's lost. Maybe not the great-grandchildren, it's gone. If you think about it in history, where is it? It's gone. Because that's all the longer it can last if you've done something really good. You know, I'm talking about good. You know, I'm not talking about just some little thing. You know, so this is the position here. The body is temporary. Right? It's full of misery. The relationships here, everyone's trying to do things for themselves. You know, if there may be some people who work on the element of trying to do for others, but it's based on their own consideration of what's good for the other person. You know what I'm saying? So it's not actually based on an elevating principle. And if it is based on an elevating principle, then it's what I'm going to get from that elevating principle. Right? Or if you do understand something and do practice nicely, one becomes proud that I'm so great and special, like Daksha. So, what is good here? Nothing. So, that's what's being offered is the spiritual realm or this. And we chose this. Right? So, therefore, it's not strange that those who have chosen this might want to further their choice by accepting Mayavada philosophy. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have to rationalize why it is you're here and not there. Right? Your identification of I and mine has to keep you inspired to be here. I am this body, or I am this and that. You know, this is mine, so that I should enjoy. You know, no one can take it away from me like that. You know, I mean, Kodak used to say that, but now it's digital, so now they don't get any business anymore, smartly. So they did take it away. Hey, it lasted 40 years, you know, so, but they did take it away from them. I don't know, that's probably over probably everybody's head here, but the ad used to be, you can't take it away from me. You take the picture, and then you have the picture, and then you have it eternally, like that. So that was the ad. So. It's funny. Just watching over the years, you go back like 20 years, and then you say something, it means something to somebody, and the people, as you go in time, it becomes more narrow, you know. So you get the more eclectic, or more, and they might know what you're talking about. So that's when you know you're getting old, right? You know? It's like, I think the saying in New York, when the policemen look like kids, then you know you're old, right? You know. Yes. Microphone. He wants the microphone.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. The person who curses.
Please say, you have to make enunciation. It's underrated.
The person who curses.
The person who curses.
Does he lose any piety, or
the person who curses?
And is there a difference between a person cursing on lust, anger, and greed as compared to a devotee like Narad Muni cursing based on this principle?
Okay. So it means you're going to keep it to Narad Muni on one side and all the rest of us on the other. Yes?
Cursing on lust, anger, and greed?
Yes, that's what I said. Us. You know, what I want to make sure is you're not going to Narad Muni on one side, us on the other, and you in the middle of the balanced, you know, very broad-minded and, you know, cursing in the proper way. I just want to make it clear. There's Narad Muni, then there's us. You know, except for, of course, Janani Vas, but... Okay? So, here, there's a difference in the curse. One, curse, yes. It's just like you want to buy something. Does it just happen? How do you purchase something? You have money, right? So how does money come? Come from piety. Where does piety come from? Occupational duties, and that is called karma. No, that's what you generate. It's one word. Hard work, okay, that's there. But now, sacrifice, okay, there we're getting there. Austerity and sacrifice, right? So that's what you're paying, right? People think it's that I work hard, I have a degree, I, you know, do all things, you know, properly according to the modern thing. No, it's the austerity that does it. It's austere to talk political correctness or, you know, work at a 9-to-5 job. That's what generates your money. Not the job itself. You understand? So that's why people can, like, stand on their toes out in the forest, you know, and do nothing that would, you know, get them a Harvard degree, and they end up as the Lord Indra, you know, who, believe it or not, is more wealthy than, you know, even like Bill Gates or someone, you know. So that came from austerity, right? So that means that is... what you're actually dealing with. Money is a form of it, right? Wealth, beauty, position, fame, knowledge, renunciation. These are all manifestations of austerity, right? So now you've performed austerity, then you can buy things with it. You know what I'm saying? So if you want to, you know, buy a curse, you can buy it, but it will reduce your austerity. It will take away from your bank account of pious credits. You understand? So that's why you don't see nowadays someone curses somebody and the earth opens up and they fall inside or they turn into a frog or stuff like that. We've heard about stuff like that, but it's not because the people aren't that austere. They don't have that power. Right? Does that make sense? So their bank balance, austere bank balance, is small. So that's there, which is good because in previous ages they had big bank balances, but they also had big humility and tolerance. So they didn't use it very often. This is very rare. I mean, this is the only time I've heard of Nandishwar Bhrigu, you know, making curses like this. Does that make sense? So it's rare. But if that power was here today, do you think there'd be anybody left? Right? You know, it'd be the planet of the frogs or something, you know, like that. You know, the last person standing who, you know, somehow or another, you know, or he was away on vacation or something, he was in the Bahamas. Maybe he didn't get cursed, so he's the only one left. But then that would be a curse, right? You know, all your friends are frogs now, you know, like that. And, you know, and no one's given the benediction. If you kiss them, they'll turn back into a prince or princess. So you got a problem, right? You know, a lot of frogs, no way out, right? You know, so it's difficult, right? And if you kiss, you know, your frog wife, you might get, what is it, salmonella or whatever it is. I think just recently, last year, about 50, you know, young girls got that from kissing frogs because they saw one movie where they kissed a frog and he turned into a prince. So they tried it and they all ended up in the hospital. So, you know, it's a problem. And if you're the only one not a frog, then there's no one to run the hospital. So when you end up there, your chances aren't good. You know, the frog's got a better chance than you. So the point is that it's not given. There's no power now because they won't use it properly. Right? So now, is there a difference between Narad Muni's curse and others' curses? We see as Narad Muni, his curse, as I said, is exactly according to Shastra. If you took Manu, what you're supposed to be in this, like, what does it say in the Shastra for someone who prefers to walk around naked in a public venue? They become trees. So how did Nalakuvera and Manigriva end up? As trees. Okay, but now, what kind of trees? Right? Not just any old ordinary trees, Arjuna trees. Arjuna trees are very, very big and strong. The older they get, the stronger they get, because they put down these like fins. So normal tree, just the trunk gets fatter, but this puts down like these special fins that come way out, so it's like braced. So they're considered auspicious, you know, medicinal, all these kind of things. So he cursed them, but they were a nice tree. And not only that, they were a tree in Nanda Baba's garden. Not only that, Krishna pulled them down. So then they're able to take part in the wonderfulness of Krishna's pastime. If they'd been another tree, like a mango tree or this or that, no big deal. Right? But an Arjuna tree, right? We never hear it specifically said, like Bhima picked up an Arjuna tree. Right? Other trees, yes, but that, he probably could, but I'm just saying, you don't hear. So baby Krishna, he pulled over an Arjuna tree. Right? Then, pulling it over, then Malakuvara and Manigriva, they get darshan of Krishna. They get to personally interact with Krishna. Now that's a curse. It's according to the proper mundane, but it ends up very nice. Does that make sense? So that is there because it's for the person's benefit, but it deals with their mentality that they're in now. So that means you have to be very well read in the scriptures, very qualified to curse. Right? So that's why we generally see only the Brahmins and sometimes Kshatriyas, occasional Kshatriyas, have that power. Because they know the Shastra. They have some power, they have some austerity. Like that. Yes. So the question is that why it would seem that worshipping any demigod would be a problem and that one would end up atheistic. So why is Shiva singled out here? Because we see is that the other side, Daksha, that they're worshipping the other demigods. So they're devotees of the other demigods. And so generally those who are devotees of other demigods are in the realm of karma. Those who worship Lord Shiva generally are in the realm of jnana, but not necessarily. So you will end up with something different. It's because generally with Shiva and that, there ends up with some philosophy. Those who worship the demigods generally had no philosophy. You know, they're just on the bodily concept and just interested in good work, good results, and things like that. But those who are worshippers of Shiva generally have a bit more of a philosophy, you see. Just if you see them, somehow or another, it's just, I guess, it's part of the scene. You know. Does that make sense? So, you know, like we said, slight difference between, you know, it's just like karma and jnana, both are a problem, but you do make a distinction. But otherwise, same material, same mundane principle. Is that okay? Is that okay? Any last question?
Maharaj, we see that Maharaj Parikshit, he forgave Kali, even though Kali did a huge mistake. While we see on the other hand, Parvati cursing Chitraketu or Chitishkumar cursing Jai Vijay, though the mistake is very small, and that is both are justified by Shastra. Can you explain?
Wait, sir. Can you? It didn't come across clear enough that I could hear what you said.
We see Kali didn't. Huge mistake, but Parikshit.
Who made a big mistake?
Kali.
She made a big mistake.
He.
Personified Kali Yuga made a big mistake.
Parikshit
Maharaj forgave him.
On the other hand, we see
Okay. So, okay, Kali Yuga, Kali himself made a big mistake. And the four Kumaras and Chitraketu made small mistakes. But he got forgiven, and the others got very big curses. Okay, so on this, then you have to go inside. What is there? Okay, why do we say Kali did a big mistake and Chitraketu or the four Kumaras did Jai Vijay did a small mistake? What would be the basis that you would say one's big, one's small?
Personified Kali, he broke the whole Brahminical culture. And
but at that moment, it was just beginning.
Yeah, but still, he was breaking the legs of cow and
breaking the legs of cow. Okay, so that's bad.
Yeah.
We agree. But now, what about stopping someone from seeing the Supreme Lord? What about laughing at the greatest devotee in the universe? Now, are those big or small? You know what I'm saying? In other words, if in the five Mahapaps, the five big sins, you know, the big, you know, how you say, you know, billboard, you know, top of the line Academy Award winning sins, okay? The top one is killing a Brahmin, right? Does it mention anything about a cow? Killing a Brahmin, stealing the wealth of a Brahmin, right? Sleeping with the Brahmin's wife, like that. You know what I'm saying? Associating with people who do this. Does that make sense? Did you notice cow mentioned? No. But Manu mentions after these main things that what sins are equal to this, the five main sins. And so killing a cow is equivalent to killing a Brahmin. Same as also blaspheming a Brahmin is equivalent to killing a Brahmin. Right? Or even killing a surrendered friend or a committed, loyal friend is equal to that. You know what I'm saying? So there's equivalence. So we see that the standard is that of the Brahmin. Right? Then after that, the cow is put there. Now to have Brahminical culture, you have to have cows. Right? Because from the cow, then you get milk. And that milk is then used in the sacrifices, ghee, butter, everything you require for yajna, making an offering to Krishna, everything, right? And by drinking that milk, it develops the finer brain tissues so that you won't become like Daksha, right? You know, or like the Shaivites, right? You'll actually understand what's correct, So that's the important thing. But the first is the Brahminical. So here is Brahmins coming, the four Kumaras. They want to see God. Brahmins want to see God. Right? Natural? Normal? Yeah. He's stopping that.
Yeah, but they are impersonalists on the other hand.
They're impersonalists on the other hand. So now, they're impersonalists, but what kind of impersonalists?
They're non-envious.
They're non-envious. So that means they're not Mayavadis. So therefore, they're worshipping the Lord on the platform of Brahman. So they're liberated souls. So what material thing could they be doing wrong? You understand? In other words, we come up with understandings what is not good, but we have to understand one is that they're not good in general, but they're specifically not good for us. You know what I'm saying? Why do we put such an emphasis on taking care of cows and this and that? Because otherwise we wouldn't do it. Right? And because cows are dear to Krishna. Krishna likes cows, so we take care of cows. Because he takes care of cows. Right? But it's not that you get a whole philosophy based simply off of the cow. You know what I'm saying? I mean, unless you want to open a political party or something like that, you know, then you do that. But otherwise it's part of a bigger picture. You know what I'm saying? We're not trying to establish a society that's based on simply being conscious of cows. That's part of the overall. The most important thing is being conscious of Vaishnavas. Right? And then Vaishnavas are humans. Humans then care for cows. So we care about cows because of being a human, not because it's good or bad according to our own concept of piety. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what is the basis for our decision that that is bad? Right? Also, if you look at it, Kali Yuga, what is his job? What's Kali Yuga's job?
Kali Yuga, his job is, he actually breaks the Brahminical culture, is broken. Because
yes, he breaks the Brahminical culture and all that. So, was he not performing his natural occupational duties? Yes. But they're natural for him, not for us. Right? He's in the office to do those things, not us. But he takes advantage. Those who are foolish enough, then they help him. So, Parikshit Maharaj, not wanting that to happen, wanting to establish a golden age, then restricted Kali so that he couldn't function. But he still gave him a place. That's devotee, that's Vaishnava. Because we see is then, in the curse of Jayanti Jai, then what happened? Did they remain as devotees? Right? Like that. They got the means. How you say? They were given the choice of coming back very quickly or not. Right? But in any case, they would be always constantly in connection with the Lord, either as devotees or demons. Chitraketu then cursed coming as the demon. He remained a devotee. Right? Through this curse, the four Kumaras became devotees. Right? And through the arrangement of Parikshit, then Kali doesn't bother the devotees. You understand? So in other words, you have to look at it from another perspective than morality. Right? Because why do I say morality? Why wouldn't I say dharma? Because the comments that you made about Kali's dealing with the cow are irreligious for us, but that's what he does. That's his job. Like, just like, is it nice, would it be nice to take a person, drag them up the side of a mountain, right? And then when you get to the top of the mountain, throw them off the mountain. Right? And then when they hit the bottom of that, come down, pick them up, drag them back up to the top of the mountain and do that all day for however many lifetimes is supposed to go through this. Is that a nice thing? You know, if you had an uncle, oh, what does your uncle do? Oh, hey, my uncle throws people off tops of mountains, you know? Like that. that. It's a really good paying job, you know. It's like that hard work, you know, dragging the guy up the mountain. You know, I don't know why they, you know, we don't let him walk, you know, that it saves us the trouble and all that. But we have to drag him, so, you know, it's like, you know, what to do. It's that, you know, we get paid for it. Okay. So, yeah? No. So, but Yamadutas, that's what they do all day. You know, boil people in oil and, you know, stuff like that, you know. You know, that's what they do. So, but that's their duty. You understand? So we have to be able to accommodate that everybody has their duty and we have ours. Just because someone else's is different doesn't mean that affects ours in any way. You know what I'm saying? Arjuna, he says, I'm human, I have my duties. Right? Urvasi's saying, we're demigods, we don't bother with your duties, we have our own, you know, concepts. But, you know, Urvasi stuck to hers, and Arjuna stuck to his. Right? You know what I'm saying? If Arjuna had said, you know, oh no, Urvasi, because in our line going back, you know, thousands and thousands of years, then you know, back by the great, 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 great to the power of 10, you know, you're in our line as one of the patriarchs, so therefore, as a human being, I can't have an interaction with you. So, but she's saying, we're demigods, we don't work on that platform. It's just, you know, we come and interact with people, you know, we're not worried about this time thing. You know, that's for humans. Right? He's in the heavenly planets. If he had interacted with her, no one would say boo. But because he didn't, he stuck to his, even though he could have followed hers. That's why he's glorious. So, because Kali, he does these things, it doesn't mean, oh, then it's okay. No, it's okay for him. One guy in the whole universe. Right? But not for anybody else. Does that make sense? So you have to see, how do you define? That's what makes it. That's where you understand someone's maturity or depth, is what is the perception that they compare things and make a judgment of right and wrong. Right? First it must be based on Shastra, then it must have the right conclusion according to the parampara. Then it actually has to work according to the time, place, and circumstance. That is Vedic judgment. So here you picked up something that, okay, being with cows was wrong, is bad. But if you were a devotee or not a devotee, you'd say the same thing. You understand? So, therefore, that's coming from conditioning. Does that make sense? Like Western devotees, the idea of, you know, inborn of the cow business isn't as strong in them. They get all fachated about sex. You know what I'm saying? Indians are more understanding of sex, but don't mess with the cow. You know, Westerners is, you know, okay, mess with the cow, okay, but don't, you know, the sex is a problem. You understand? So that's our conditioning before we came. So now you have to bring that in line with Scripture. Then you see the balance. Then you see, as cows are bad, but we're also dealing here with Brahmins. So then, therefore, you have to see which is the root. Does that make sense? Because we call it Brahminical culture, we don't call it cow culture. Brahminical culture includes cows. Right? But people just taking care of cows doesn't necessarily mean they follow Brahminical culture. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's like I'm not sure who they are, Maasai or one of those. They worship cows. They say God's blue and he has the most cows. That's what makes him God. Right? We have, you know, I have 100, 200 cows, but God has unlimited cows. That's why he's God. And he's blue. They say that. And they don't eat the cow. They don't kill the cow and eat the cow. Right? Of course, they're warriors, so they drink the cow's blood, but hey, you know, so. You know, up to that point in the conversation, Prabhupada was impressed. Oh, wow, okay. And then they say, no, but they drink the cow's blood like that. Then it's kind of like, Prabhupada, we don't talk about these guys anymore. Right? You understand? So, therefore, it doesn't include that. So you have to see what's the bigger picture. Cows are included in Brahminical culture, but people do follow, take care of cows very nicely. You know, and basically you can say before the British and Americans went all over the world, people didn't kill cows and eat them. They just didn't. It's a new thing for many of them, basically, since, you know, just 100 years, 150 years, some even less, some only 50 years. They just didn't eat cows. Cows give milk. Why would you eat them? You know? You know what I'm saying? So to understand is the Brahminical culture is the bigger. So therefore, what's the problem in the Brahminical culture happening here? Right? You're saying theirs are breaking the culture, but in the other two examples, they're actually bothering the Brahmins. You know what I'm saying? They're guards, so they're Kshatriyas. They're bothering the four Kumaras who are Brahmins. Right? Shiva is in that Brahminical position, topmost. Chittaketu is a king. So therefore, on the material platforms, there's a problem there. They admitted their problem so that they become devotees. Chittaketu was already a devotee. So you think he was already an advanced devotee. That's why he was laughing. He was sitting here going, you know, in the normal state, then one is very careful about association of women. And it's a very major element for the sadhaka. And here he's laughing because he is an Uttamadhikari. You know, but because he's a king, and kings are always surrounded by maidservants and everything like this. You know, remember Devaki had 2,000 of them, you know, so... You know, that was just a king here. Chittaketu was a much bigger king. Chittaketu had 10 million wives. So imagine how many maidservants he had. Right? So for him being surrounded by women is normal. So he's sitting there laughing that I'm a pure devotee. And I'm surrounded by all these Vidyahara girls. But we're not dealing on the mundane platform. But it's just, you know, part of it. It's just the culture, right? You know? And then Lord Shiva is sitting in the assembly of sages. All these sages are celibate. Right? And he's sitting there in the sages with his wife sitting on his lap. Not that he has a wife, and okay, Shiva has a wife, but we talk to him anyway. His wife is sitting on his lap. And all the sages don't care because they're just listening to Shiva, because they're transcendental, Shiva's transcendental, you know, Chittaketu, they're all transcendental. See, he's just laughing at this situation. And it's a funny situation. You know, it's not like, you know, Narad Muni comes to visit Shiva sitting under the tree and it's only the two of them. But this is, he's sitting there with his wife and talking transcendence. He's just thinking it's funny. Parvati didn't catch that because it's her husband. So, you know, you don't, her husband's position is her position. So for her, somebody laughs at her husband, it means he's laughing at her. Right? So that also is an inherent nature. So Chittaketu should have been careful about that because his women would have thought it's funny because they're laughing at someone else. But Parvati wouldn't think it's funny because they're laughing about her husband. So it means her. You understand? So that you don't do. Even in the transcendental platform, you don't directly or indirectly insult another woman. It's just not the etiquette. So therefore then, the curse was correct, but it was for this other purpose. The pastime proved that a devotee, a demon who's a devotee is greater than Indra, who's a very neophyte devotee. You know what I'm saying? An advanced devotee, even though he's a demon, in the demon line, like Prahlad Maharaj, or is greater than Indra, who's a neophyte, though he controls the universe. Ultimately, it comes to know what? That's the whole point. At the end of, he finally, you know, cuts off Ritrasura's head, so he wins the battle. And all the demigods are, you know, showering flowers and doing this whole thing. But then in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, the acharyas, I think Vishwanath like that, say, actually, Ritrasura won because he went back to Godhead. And Indra lost and he has to stay and rot in the material world. You know? So this is a very important lesson. Very important. Otherwise, by our conditioning, we will take these curses and these positions too seriously. You know, I'm a good, I'm upstanding, I'm moral, I'm regular. The person who's not regular, then he's not very good. But we don't know that. You know, in our etiquette dealings, we follow properly and act according to how someone interacts with us. they deal properly, we deal properly back. They don't deal properly, then we deal appropriately. But we can't necessarily tell. Right? We can only go by symptoms. You know what I'm saying? So to be proud of one's birth, proud of one's education, position, power, influence, knowledge, this is devotional service in the mode of ignorance. And according to Shastra, you're actually supposed to avoid such a person. You're not actually supposed to associate with them, even though they're a devotee. You're supposed to avoid them. Like some of the mode of passion, at least they're doing things correctly, though their mentality is they're fruitive. So they're not good association, but it doesn't say that you have to avoid them like the plague. But according to modern standards, that devotee in the mode of ignorance would be considered good. You know, he's got himself a good job, he's well, he's doing nice in society, he has a strong opinion, he's willing to voice it, he's respected. You know, but he's proud of that, that's what makes him who he is, and that's why he's better than the common devotee. So you're actually not supposed to associate with him, let alone listen to him. Okay? You know, goodness, they know knowledge, they deal in the present, they're detached from everything, but they're a little bit too attached to getting out of the material world, as opposed to developing love for Krishna. So what one's looking for is pure goodness, where one is wanting to develop love for Krishna. Right? And so what is favorable to develop that love, that's what's performed. Right? And what's not favorable, that's what's rejected. That's why, you understand? Why dealing with cows badly is bad, because it's not good for our Krishna consciousness. Not that dealing with cows in one way or another actually has an importance in its own, seeing that it's an illusion anyway. You know what I'm saying? It's an illusion that this is a cow and I'm a human. Right? It means we're both, you know, pure spirit souls, devotees of Krishna, but we're both an illusion and we don't know that. So temporarily we've been assigned a situation in the material world. But that's temporary. So to think that this is a cow, no, it's a human. So that's why the cow then is engaged in Krishna's service. You understand? That's why those who actually understand the Krishna consciousness, they buy milk. It means if you have cows and can grow it and make yourself, that's the best. It's a proper example. You take care of the cows, the whole thing. But even if you don't, the devotees still go out and buy milk. Because you offer that milk to Krishna, what happens? That cow gets benefit. Even though they're in some kind of industrialized kind of system where they're not taken care of nicely. But whether, even if I don't buy the milk, that's not going to change. But I engage the cow's milk in Krishna's service. Well, there are those, because the cows aren't dealt with nicely, they won't take any dairy products. And so they feel good themselves and they feel very moralistic. And all those cows they could have helped all go to hell. So you tell me that's Krishna conscious. Has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Nothing close, other than, okay, it's better than a gross meat eater. Yes. It's better than the guy who eats the cow. But the point is neither of them actually want to benefit the cow. They'll say politically they want to benefit, but we're talking spiritual here. We're a spiritual movement. We're not a political movement. Understand? So it's nice if that's one's mentality before joining, but once one's joining, one actually knows the picture. You understand? So this is what we're talking about, how mundane concepts can actually get in the way of devotional service. Because of the mode of ignorance, because of coming to wrong conclusions, because of the bodily concept. All curses done at this time. They get in the way of devotional service. They have nothing to do with devotion. The actual thing is, does it have a connection to Krishna? Is it favorable to Krishna? And if it is, good. And if it's not, you better be able to explain it. If you're going to jump up and down on your soapbox and say this is wrong and this is nonsense, you better be able to explain it. That explanation is called Vedanta. It's not called, I feel like it, or my friends feel like it, or everybody knows. It's, you know, that's dogma. You understand? Vedic is called dogma. This is a tangent. Called dogma because it's something you don't want to discuss. Dogma means that philosophical point that you don't even discuss, because you just take it, that's the way it is, and you don't want to discuss it. If you're willing to discuss it, it's not dogma. We say Krishna's God. We're willing to discuss it. So it's not dogma. But some will say other people are God. And if you question it, they'll burn you at the stake. That's called dogma. So, therefore, if you say, why is this particular perception of yours in morality right? And they'll say, well, everybody knows that. This is, you know, why are you being... That's dogma. Because they have no philosophy. It is only a feeling. And that feeling came from material feelings, material goodness or passion or ignorance. It did not come from transcendence. It's an obstacle. And these obstacles are given right here. So knowledgeable, so nicely situated, but so on the bodily platform. Or so into transcendence, but completely miss the point of the Shastra and end up not as a devotee. So neither of them end up as a devotee. Neither the Karmi or the Jnani. That's what we're supposed to learn from here. So that means if they're getting any kind of result, or they're endeavoring for any kind of result, it's actually their endeavor, the quality of it's going to depend upon its involvement in the spiritual energy, I mean, in the laws of nature. Right? And then, last of all, you know, as a devotee, and if you want to be progressive, you have to be able to understand that there is a hierarchy in activity, goals, results, identities. There is a hierarchy. So in other words, immoral mundanity is the lowest. Moral mundanity is higher than that. You know what I'm saying? And then you have the detachment or the impersonal is higher than that. Yes, detachment is higher than that. So in other words, the jnani is higher than the karmi, simply because he's farther out of the material world. Higher than that is someone who actually understands Brahman. Higher than that is the yogi, right, who understands Paramatma. Higher than both of these is the devotee who understands how that Brahman or the Paramatma is connected to the Lord. Higher than that is the one who's actually engaged in worship of the Lord as a person. You know, in other words, on the Bhagavan platform. Right? So there's a hierarchy. And then within each of these, though, there's going to be small details. Right? In other words, immoral, mundane, that which is less immoral is considered better than which is more immoral. Right? Even those who are very immoral, you know, they don't mind people drink and, you know, get drunk and that, but you shouldn't drive while you're drunk. Right? Why? Because if you drive, then you can jeopardize others' lives. Like that. Otherwise, if people were driving around drunk and there were no accidents, nobody would care. You know, in other words, I want to go out and get drunk, but then I don't want to be run over by another guy who went out and got drunk. Right? So therefore, even they have hierarchies in these things. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? So, understanding that, then you look at what the person's doing. Right? Because your whole point is, how does a preacher deal with the situation? So now you take a person. He's dealing in something. Let us say, okay, since we said it, let's say he's dealing in something. Okay? Like that. Or we could then, you know, keep it more contemporary, and dealing meaning something more illicit. Or we could say he's dealing in something means he's got a dealership and sells, you know, secondhand cars or something. So the point is now, in dealing with whatever that material energy, you look at it. Is he successful or not? Right? Let us say, you know, if he's not successful, we'll consider on one level that's not as so bad. If he's more successful, that's worse. Right? You have a small-time drug dealer who's never very good at it, or a big-time drug dealer is better at it. So we'll consider the big-time worse. Why? Because it's more going deeper into the immorality. Right? Because that we're looking at the action. You know, and the size of the action. A bigger bad action is worse than a smaller bad action. Right? They're both bad, but, you know, it's still like that. So we're looking at the material cause. Right? Or the operative cause here, actually. So, but now look at it. Now, if that person who is running a big drug dealing and someone is running a small one, what's the difference? Why is the one more successful and the one other one not? What is the difference between the big drug dealer and the small drug dealer? Because we put aside already that one is doing a bigger immoral act and one is doing a smaller immoral act. So the obvious is not what we're talking about, right? Because if the obvious is so easy, then everybody would be able to apply it, right? The subtleties of in the preaching. The point is that the bigger one, he has more focus. His identity as a drug dealer is greater. His identity is stronger. His focus on the drug dealing is stronger. His consideration of every moment that he's dealing with it to get the result of selling what he's selling is greater. Therefore, he's getting greater result because he's actually following the laws of nature. So whether he's selling drugs or he was selling, you know, secondhand cars or he was selling saris, it's the same thing. The guy with the bigger business, more successful, is more focused, which is the rule of any action. Action is dependent upon focus, endeavor, and dependency upon the Supreme. Right? So, here his focus is great, his endeavor is great. Now, we see is he religious or not? Right? Does he depend upon higher? Right? And so we see there are those who are in this who are. They're very religious. They give a lot of charity. They help other people in the community that are having a problem with the money that they get. They'll do better than the ones who think they're the end-all and be-all. You know, they'll go for a certain time and then they'll end up. You know, the crocodiles lead them or something like that. You know, that's definitely where they always end up, right? But you have to keep crocodiles if you're a big drug guy, right? No? So then that means, okay, now you distinguish between a more pious big drug dealer and a less pious. So now if he's more pious, so in here is this person is very focused. If you can convince him to be a devotee, he'll apply the same focus, endeavor, and dependence upon the Supreme in devotional service as he will before. You know what I'm saying? So you start there. So what the problem's not the thing, because whether he's breathing a lot of drugs or little drugs, it's still drugs, it's bad. Right? But the point is that he has, these are the qualities you bring out, not the gut. No, you don't tell him, oh, this drug's bad and this and that. You don't start with that because this is his livelihood. He makes good money, so he's going to listen to you. Right? But you start off with about the reason he's successful is because he has an identity. He knows who he is. He knows the field. He knows who he's dealing with. That takes intelligence. Right? That takes intelligence. He's depending upon some higher, you know, that, you know, whatever he calls it, luck or, you know, like that by, you know, Mother Mary is kind upon him or, you know, whatever it is that he's doing. Then that aspect, then you deal with that. So then there's something higher. So now he's just seeing it here, but what about him as a person? Okay, that makes his money. You make good money. You know, you have a social standing, you have power, you have influence, great. But what about you as a person? What's the greater picture here? Isn't there something beyond this? Right? So, because if you want him to take up Krishna consciousness, he has to be convinced there's life after dealing drugs. Right? There's something more. He will still be taken care of. Everything will work for him. So then you have to take, broaden his understanding of identity. Because his understanding, having an identity, be focused on it, being confident of it, going for it, that's all very good. These are eternal principles. He's just misapplying them. Right? Just like eating. Is eating a problem? No, everybody's got to eat. It's what you eat, how you eat it, what's your consciousness in eating it. All these, that's the problem. Right? So, you know, a person who likes to eat, you don't tell them, you know, this is nonsense. You tell them, eat prasad. You understand? So you look at what qualities are they working on? What actually makes them successful or not successful? If he's not successful, everything he does falls apart on him. You know, he's a real schlemiel or something. You know, then you look at it and say, you know, it says, but, you know, you're doing this, you're running this, but how do you see yourself in here? Well, you know, I mean, I try, I want to do something, but, you know, I'm not very good. So that's your identity. I'm not good. So that means you'll get a not good result. You have to have proper identity. You have to have proper this and that. right? And then from that, then you can you'll be successful. But still, this doesn't deal with them as a person, an individual. So then it's the same thing as the other person. It's the same path. Notice it's one path. So as far as what is usable in Krishna consciousness, the one guy was actually closer and the other guy's actually farther. Because he has to get to the next stage. That doesn't mean he has to become good at drug dealing, but you take him through the same path. There's one path, Krishna says. So you start wherever it is, you know, wherever it is. Then you start there. That then how it is. So when we say this, then the modern culture, prides itself in thinking it does consider this, but it does on many occasions, but on certain things it doesn't. So the point is start from where the person is. Make it very clear that they have an identity. But we want to switch from the mundane to the spiritual. So the principle is, if mundane identity did so much for you, what's spiritual going to do for you? Even better. So like that, a preacher can look. The person's totally into how they dress and is totally self-conscious. But that took endeavor. That took consciousness to be able to dress like that. You know, so then you start with that, you know, the nice dressing and the consideration, and people don't appreciate aesthetics, and because aesthetics is one of God's opulences. Beauty is one of God's opulences. So people don't appreciate God's beauty, so it's not just the dress, it's like, look at how the tree, the leaves unfold and everything. You know, that's there. You don't, it's a sloppy tree no one likes, you know, but it nicely unfolds, everybody likes. The branch is broken, oh, that's not good, you have to take that off. But, you know, you know what I'm saying? So, you understand? So, beauty is one of the things. So, that's where you start from. But then you can understand if that's there, and then we go back into nature, and that's so beautiful. Then how beautiful is the person who created that nature? You understand? So you can start anywhere. You understand? That's the meaning. That's why Prabhupada is successful. Because anyone, anywhere, he would start with whoever they were and take that and engage that. But if we let our own mundane morality get in the way, then a lot of people who could be engaged won't be. Because one, we will miss a whole group of people. Because actually the kind of more educated, intellectual, liberal, kind of, you know, politically correct person is actually a very small minority in the world. You know, most people kind of have standards, you know, and aren't actually worried about this kind of more wishy-washy liberals point. Most people aren't. More people are conservative than are liberal. Just liberals make more noise, you know, unless they're really big conservatives, then they make noise also. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that it's not, they're dealing with an extremely small window. So it's all right to deal with that window. Great, somebody's got to deal with them. But to try to claim that all other forms of preaching has to be in line with that, that's one of the grossest mistakes that a devotee could make. I mean, extremely gross. They'll think, no, it's very liberal. No, it's extremely narrow. It's a very narrow market. And probably most of the people that are actually successful in the world don't fit into that market in reality. Because people who are successful know it's hard work, know there are standards, know that there are laws of nature you have to abide by. And this idea that just I feel it, therefore that makes it reality, they think that's foolishness. Does that make sense? So that means that actually, if you're looking at what practically makes it work, what actually makes it function, then right there, most people of the planet can relate to that more than anything else. Right? And if they are a person who works on all the feelings and this, then you start with the feeling. They're concerned about others. Yes, so that's good. That shows that they're better than a person who's self-centered. Someone who's just self-centered, that, you know, they'll get what they want, but they'll disturb everyone else, and then everybody won't be able to be happy. I mean, why should only one be happy? Everybody should be happy, right? That's the whole idea. Because the point is for us, it's not a problem. You water the root, all the leaves become happy. So we don't have a problem with everybody being happy. You have to know the method to do it. So therefore, if you really want to make them happy, then the mundane is temporary, but the spiritual is not. So therefore, if you're really concerned about benefiting everybody, then give them Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So you can start from an emotion, a feeling. You can start from an identity. You can start from an endeavor. You can start from a goal. You know? It doesn't matter what you start with. But you have to be able to see that. That's why then one needs to know a bit of philosophy. That's why it's important. If you understand the sambandha abhideya prayojana, you understand any position, you know, any goal, any endeavor that anybody makes. Because it's all based on the same principles of the laws of God. The laws of, you understand? Everything comes back to relationship. A preacher should be able to dovetail the propensities of people in general. But yes, but you have to notice what part of the propensity are we talking about. Right? We're not talking about dovetailing his drug dealing in Krishna's service. We're talking about dovetailing the mentality and the endeavor and the work that makes his drug dealing as successful. If you can't tell that, you'll never be able to do it. That's the point of Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya is not the thing. It's the mentality. The mentality is right, then you can deal with things. Mentality is not right, you can't deal with things. If you can't tell the difference, right, then it's going to be a problem. Right? If you mistake the operational cause as the ultimate cause, and if you mistake the material cause, you know, includes the formal cause, you've made a mistake. The ultimate cause includes the operational. You know, it includes the formal, it includes the material. Because Krishna is absolute, he includes everything. He is the ultimate cause, then his energies then are in all times and all places, all circumstances, glorifying his qualities and making arrangements for interaction. So that reflection here is the laws of nature, right? The internal potency is making all these situations. So they're all to please Krishna. But there's a quality behind it, so you have to find Krishna in it. Then you can take them to Krishna. If you can't find it, how are you going to teach them? Then in that case, you just tell them it's nonsense and so many people are suffering and this and that. You're going to have big karma for this. And so therefore, better you don't do this. Better you do something better, beneficial for yourself. Then take that line because it's direct. You found Krishna in it. And you can give it to them. So, but nowadays, devotees are saying, well, we want to avoid this direct preaching. We want to use more soft, more tactical. But the soft and tactical they're using is purely mundane. It's not spiritual. Spiritual means you don't change the process. You just change instead of dealing with the external, the operational, and the material cause. You see and you deal with the ultimate and the formal cause. You know, in other words, the spiritual and metaphysical elements at work. Because the physical works because of the metaphysical. Right? So just as the physical can be engaged in Krishna's service or not, it can be Maya or Krishna, like that, same way the metaphysical. But the metaphysical is actually only meant for spiritual. But because it's the material world is a reflection of the spiritual, therefore the metaphysical elements then here can be used either way. But we're only interested in the devotional, so we'll show them how the metaphysical works on the spiritual platform, as opposed to the material. So that way, they know how to do these things. Otherwise, then what happens is you think everything you've ever done before is Maya. Maybe your motive, but your processes using were not. You know what I'm saying? The person's very clean in his house and that, because that's what you do in their house. They're, you know, that's just the, you know, the Indian culture they're from. But then when they join as a devotee, that's all Maya, and now they live like a slob and think that that's Krishna conscious. That's because they understood Krishna conscious simply on the external point. They didn't understand the subtle, the metaphysical. Dantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadita Bhaktivinda ki, Jainatai Govura Premanandi.